Hey everyone, and thanks for listening to Lit Radio Podcast. I'm Thea. Today we are joined by Simone Fenton Jarvis and Louisa Clark, the authors of The Human-Centric Leader, People plus Profit equals Performance. Simone is the author of The Human-Centric Workplace, the first book in the collection. She is a multi-award-winning leader with 2 decades of experience working within workplace and facilities management, an MBA and a multitude of industry qualifications. Louisa is a veteran of the Royal Air Force and a multi-award-winning senior leader turned executive coach. With a career spanning both military and civilian sectors, she brings lived experience and hard-earned insight to the subject of human-centric leadership. The Human-Centric Leader is a playbook for modern leadership in a world evolving at speed. It challenges long-held assumptions about what it means to lead and replaces them with a practical human-first approach. Hi, Simone and Louisa. It's a great pleasure to have you with us on Lit Radio Podcast. How are you today?
Brilliant, thank you. Yeah, really good. Had a lovely weekend. Good. Ready to start the week.
Yeah, I'm ready to start again. I'm definitely ready for spring, but it's all right. It's not far off.
Yeah, it's not. But yeah, I think we're all ready for spring now. Okay, so let's start with the first question, which is why you decided to write The Human-Centric Leader. Simone, we can start with you.
Yeah, I think I can probably answer both of us, actually, in that we wanted to write a book that we both wanted when we started off in leadership. I think we both kind of come together with that main aim of, you know, what was missing when we started and what would really help somebody now. So yeah, anything to add to that, Lou?
Yeah, no, I agree. We wanted to have a book. We wanted to write a book that we thought that anybody could pick up in whatever stage of leadership they were in, they could pick it up and it would mean something to them. And it was really important for me as well and Simone to write it in plain English so that it was something that, like I said, any level, it doesn't matter where you were on your journey, you could pick it up and really relate to it.
Yeah, absolutely. I do agree that writing a book in plain and easy to understand language is very important because busy people, they don't have time to read books that they can barely understand. And that actually leads quite nicely to my second question, which is about what was the writing process like for you? I mean, for Simone, that's her second book, but it's her first co-written book. And Louisa, for you, that's your first book. So what was it like to write it? Louisa, we can start with you on this one.
Do you know what? It was a really lovely experience. We had never planned to write a book together, nor had we planned to start a business together. It was so natural. It just felt so right. We had a few conversations, and originally I was going to support with writing maybe the coaching element of the book. But actually, through conversation, myself and Simone realized really quickly that we could do this together. And we both knew where our strengths were as well. So throughout the book, we understood which parts Simone would write and which parts I would write, but then peer review. And we both sort of just knew, didn't we? We knew what was kind of which bits we should definitely hone in on and which bits were Simone should hone in on. And then between us, we spent an awful long time reviewing each section, each part that we'd put together and kind of adding comment. I think we were quite critical of each other at times, making sure that it was the best kind of book that we could put together. But I think all in all, whilst the process has been quite long, I wouldn't have wanted to do it with anybody else.
Oh, look at that. Yeah, same. I think it was obviously very different writing with somebody else rather than myself. I think it was harder and easier at the same time. I think harder in the you're kind of reading between the lines and you're having to catch up on the thread of what Louisa were thinking and then go, right, what can I add to this? And obviously, like, quite different backgrounds, but very aligned on things as well. So it was very, very different. I think from an accountability bit of getting things done, it was a lot easier. And I think we naturally kind of fell into a pattern because I'm quite a night owl and Louise is up quite early. So I think we naturally was kind of like I was writing things and then Louise was looking at it in the morning and then we'd go again. So it kind of just flew, like kind of flown and quite quickly, but also, quite naturally as well.
Yeah, I felt it was really natural. I felt like looking back, I think we had that first kind of couple of months where we were like, how do we make our voices, how do we write the book so our vows so it doesn't feel like it's just a Simone or just a Louisa? So how do we like join it together? And then we started putting scenarios in and examples of things that we'd been through, and it just seemed to fall into place really nicely in the end. And like you say, Simone, we've got quite complementary backgrounds but still quite different. And sometimes some different views on things. And I think that comes out in the book.
Yeah, absolutely. And you both mentioned your backgrounds, which I also thought was quite interesting because, yeah, at the moment you're both workplace consultants, but Louisa, you also got your military background, which I thought might be a very interesting addition to the leadership dialogue in the book. So yeah, I thought that
Definitely.
was a very interesting combination. And Simone, just talking of your first book, The Human-Centric Workplace, how do you see the human-centric leader following up from that first title of yours?
Yeah, I feel like it wasn't done necessarily on purpose, but I think once we started writing, I think what I realized was the human-centric workplace was more like the macro, the system, the bigger organizational, how can we, systemically change things? Whereas I think our human-centric leader book is more now how the individual can make a difference to that system. So the book's really plug in really nicely together. And sitting back now, I think, should this one have come before the big one? And I think, like, either or, like, I don't think there's a right or wrong way. But I think they both plug in really nicely together. It's just that, what I realised was even, 5 years on from writing that, the human centric workplace, some of the challenges that, most of the challenges actually that I wrote about still exist. And actually, that is because are we all sat back waiting for somebody else to fix it? Therefore, the human-centric leader now is how actually we all individually can do better.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember working with you on your first book, and yeah, I mean, a lot of the things we were dealing with back then. I mean, yeah, we're still dealing with it nowadays. So yeah, obviously, yeah, we need to continue that work. And then talking about human-centric leadership, Louisa, let's start with you on that one. How would you describe that human-centric leadership?
I mean, just continuing that conversation as well that you were having is that there's never, for me, never been a more relevant time to talk about human-centric leadership. The world is pretty crazy at the moment, and trying to think of really good leaders and good leadership is becoming more and more difficult. So for me and Simone, I think we agree that we wanted to write a book that showed what we thought good and great leadership looked like, bringing in those like that self-awareness, the empathy, the trust, seeing humans first and not just the functions. So yeah, for me, being a human-centric leader was about understanding other people and then think seeing the bigger picture. I mean, our tagline is obviously people plus profit equals performance. We understand as well that there is a balance to be had. We want the human-centric leader has to have a balance of looking after your people, but also making profit. At the end of the day, it's not a dirty word. We still need to make money. And I think the two of those together, they are what drives performance.
Yeah, absolutely. And when organizations tip that balance, if it's too much profit, the people suffer. And if it's too much people, the profit suffers in the kind of maybe the shorter term and the longer term, because also then the people suffer. So the balance is really important because actually, if we don't sort the profit out and make a sustainable business, people are going to lose their jobs and livelihoods in the longer term anyway. So actually, it's how can we make money and use it in a responsible and sustainable way, and look after the people in the organization, doing the right thing by the leadership, but also, what how can they use that money as well elsewhere? And one thing that we do, I think, really well, to say we're a small business, is the fact that we commit 10% of our time to social value. And I think actually, if we can do it, it's just proving that the larger organisations should absolutely be doing it.
Yeah, absolutely agree with you on that. It's all about the right balance.
I think so. I think it's really tempting to for people to write a book which really sort of talks about, the human-centric leadership, human-centered leadership, and really kind of honing in on that, but forgetting the other side of it. We really wanted to write a balanced book. We wanted it to be about the human, and we want to have a world that's more caring and organizations that are more caring, but not at the expense of also being honest about people needing to make money as well. I think it's just too easy to write a book the other way. It needed to be balanced.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I was going to say. Yeah, because when you talk about human-centric leadership, a lot of the time it's really focused on the humans and how you should treat your employees. But yeah, at the end of the day, profit is absolutely essential if you want to actually run a successful business. So I think, yeah, that balance is absolutely essential. But then in the book you say that it all starts with a purpose. So yeah, could you talk to us a little bit about what role purpose plays in this whole balance, and why is it so important? Simone, we can begin with you.
Yeah, I think, I guess, to quote Simon Sinek, it's start with your why. And I think if you can get your why in place, that is the thing that is going to drive you individually, but also collectively as well. We don't all have to be aligned on that why, but it all has to kind of underpin and feed each other, I think. We can all have different elements of the why, but I think it's how it builds up to that bigger picture. But I think the important thing is that people need direction. They need to feel that day to day when they're working on things that they're making progress and they're moving forwards with what they are trying to achieve. We've all, probably early on in our careers worked in kind of dead end jobs where it's just we're just waiting for the salary and you just go, yeah, I need to get paid. And you're counting down to the weekend all the time. And then you get to the weekend and you're like, oh, right, 2 days and then I'll go again. Or if you're fortunate enough, that dead end job could have involved weekend work like mine did. And I think like you just don't, you don't, it's not living and you just kind of go, actually, there's something missing. There's like, we spend too much time at work for it not to matter.
No, I totally agree with that. I couldn't say it any better myself. I think as well, I suppose I'd say, like, in a world that is as difficult and well, extraordinary at the moment, the role of purpose in organisations couldn't be any, more necessary. It's all that little those that those that role of purpose in organisation could be the difference between giving people hope and no hope.
It's the anchor as well. Like when the world is so upside down and back to front, and there's existential dread coming from left, right, and center. I think actually, if we can stick to the purpose, and the organization that we're working with should be the anchor that keeps us stable when everything else is being a bit bonkers outside.
Yeah, definitely. And I think we've all read all of those surveys about the new generations coming into the office, who are also quite driven by purpose and not so much by how much they're being paid. So yeah, I think it's going to be becoming more and more important. And just one follow-up question on that, because obviously we understand the importance of purpose, but how easy is it to come with that purpose as a leader?
Yeah, that's a how easy is it? Wow, I think it's something that you need to join together, So I think purpose an organization's purpose is driven by the people in the organization. I don't think it's one leader's job to come up with purpose. I think it's something that you grow together with. I don't know what you think, Simone.
I think I've seen different sides. I've worked for organizations that are, 100 plus years old, and I've worked for ones which are startups. And I think purpose is interesting because in the older organization, the purpose, of course, had to shift because technology had shifted. It was a technology company, and what had started off essentially as a printer company has had to shift into digital transformation and workplace services, and so the purpose has shifted. But actually, the thing that hasn't shifted is that we're there to make work easier for people. So I think as much as the way it was delivered shifted, the purpose hadn't shifted. Whereas in a startup, it's quite different because I think it's very tempting in early days to basically focus on the profit to get the sustainability bit in and miss the purpose. And actually, if you don't get that purpose in place as a startup, it's almost like you're building your organization on kind of wobbly ground. So I've seen kind of both ends of the spectrum, and I think actually it's quite easy to get the purpose in place, but it's quite difficult to then communicate it and make it matter to everybody. And it's how do we make sure that that purpose has got a place for everybody, and everybody's contributing to it and sees the bigger picture as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And then moving on to your framework in the book, you've got the human-centric leadership framework, which has a few different components. The first one being leading yourself. So, Luisa, how do we do that, and why is it so vital?
Yeah, so when we were developing this framework, we believed wholeheartedly together that leading yourself was the first part of the framework, without a doubt, because it's so important for leaders to understand who they are, what drives them, that increased self-awareness. Because all too often, I think if you don't understand who you are, what your values are, what drives you, what your beliefs are, you don't know. You can't, you, well, you'll find it difficult to lead others because you don't know what your own triggers are. So it's really important to know where you are as a starting point, and then that supports you in terms of leading others later. So we believed wholeheartedly to start with leading yourself right at the very beginning. So the focus part right from the very start is your strengths, your weaknesses, your values, your triggers, your beliefs, your patterns, your blind spots, before we move on to anything else.
Yeah, I think I'll that is I totally agree with that, and it's the upshot of if you don't know yourself, the impact that it has on other people and the way that you lead. Because if somebody's lacking in, say, self-awareness, or they are triggered by certain things, or they've got biases around something, if you don't know them things about yourself, then that is going to impact how you lead your team, and that is then going to impact the purpose and the mission of the company and the culture of the company as well. So it's about get your foundations again right in place. How you carry yourself is the first thing that matters. Maybe that's one thing that Lou's brought from the military. It's you need to lead yourself, and then how you fit into the team, because I think that's something that's really, if you look at the use of kind of discipline in the military, for instance, and the consistency that's required and how you carry yourself, I think actually there's a lot that the leadership world can learn from that.
I think I'd add to that with coaching as well, actually. Coaching really helps you to sort of dig deeper into your own sort of self-awareness and even consider what your values might be. So all too often I speak to people and you say, what is it that drives you? What are your values? And they often sort of look blankly as if to say, well, I haven't really thought about that. Well, if you haven't thought about it, how do you know that you're making the right decisions when you're making those decisions on a day-to-day basis? Because if they don't fit with your values, that's when you become incongruent and you're not living in the way that you really feel like you should be.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the second part of the framework is leading people. So, Simone, how do we do that effectively and in a human-centered way?
Again, I think part of all, I guess all the framework fits together, but from the leading the people element, it's the a massive element is communication and the purpose and how you take people along the journey, but also just the general, things like inclusion. How are you making sure that the way that you carry yourself, the way that you communicate, is inclusive to that team? How do you make sure that when you're almost kind of you're leading that team, that people are not seeing you as this kind of like parent of the team, and that you're there to just look after them. It's actually, you're all adults, and actually, as adults, how can you come together and perform for the greater element of the team? So I think there's a very collective nature to the leading the team bit, and that takes some practice to get that right as well.
I think that the most honest we can be is that everybody's different, and that leading people is nuanced, and some people you'll get along with, some people you won't. Some people, when we look at behavioral styles, for example, that we all have different styles. And I think until you start to look at that leading people element, you don't always realize why maybe your relationship with somebody hasn't worked, or why that client isn't happy with what you've done, or why your team isn't gelling together as it should be, or maybe you haven't sort of looked at why, your listening skills when people are giving feedback when you're working with people. And I think that leading people element looks at all of those elements that maybe you've kind of been leading, you've been leading every day in your general way, but you haven't really delved deeper into what it's like to manage the people. And I think that part of the framework looks deeper into managing the people.
Yeah. One thing I'd add to that as well is the conflict that happens within teams. Because everybody is different, it's how you then kind of repair that conflict and don't just, live with a big rupture that kind of niggles under the surface and blows up now and again. And actually, how can you make sure that as a team and as a leader, that you're leading that team in a way that they can have honest discussions and they can be honest with each other and they can challenge each other. And there can be conflict, and it can be done in a healthy way, because when we get into the kind of the cultures and the values, and on the wall of organizations, it might say, we're like a family here. And I always challenge that we're like a family here, because actually there's nothing wrong with being a family-owned run business and leading like a family. But how many families are dysfunctional? So actually, the thing that I always go back to is, it's great to be like a family, but also have healthy conflicts and have healthy challenge, and make sure you're having them deep conversations to, make sure that what is happening day to day is the things that are driving performance. Because you can be like a family, but you can also be like an organization that is functioning effectively and having high performance.
Yeah, I really agree with that, because I think if even if you hire the most brilliant people, if they can't work together, then nothing is really going to happen. So yeah, I think that part of the framework is, yeah, it's really essential. And then that leads nicely to the third component, which is leading the organization. So Luisa, what does that entail?
I think we've sort of covered a little bit of this when we talked about purpose and stuff earlier, but it's the zoom out. It's the actually, we've looked at ourselves, we've looked at our people, but now do we need to look at the organization and what that's there for? It is the mission, vision, and values. It is the what's driving us, what's our purpose, what are we here to do and achieve, and who are we here to support? And I think it's having those honest conversations about about profit, for example, the finances of the business. What is the strategy for the next 5, 10, 15 years, or whatever that may be? So this is the element, this is the bit where we look at those areas, and we talk honestly and openly about, are your values really just something that's written on the wall outside your office that you walk past every day, and that you put into a client, your client quote every time you're quoting for business? Or is it something that's really being lived by the teams, and your organization? And so that's the bit that we dig deep into during the leading the organization.
Yeah, I think too often we see organizations where departments are fighting for budget, and it might be, oh, can that come out of your budget? Because I've got no budget left. Can that come out? That can come out of my budget. And I think across the organization, you go, it's the same budget, it's the same financial pot of money. So actually, you need to work together better than basically fighting and penny pinching over the budget, and actually look across the organisation saying, right, what is the best use of this money? And sometimes how budgets have done are not necessarily in the best way to get people to not work in silos, because actually the budgets are very siloed, and it might be like, oh, here's your HR budget, this is your facilities budget, and here is your IT budget. And actually, the thing that is missing is, well, what about the employee experience budget that is all three of them things? So how can then pots actually weave in together as well? So it's things like that that we dig into.
Yeah, very interesting. And I think all of those three elements, which are about leading yourself, leading people, and leading the organization, a very important skill to have to be able to excel in all of those is communication. And also, the last element of the framework is leading communication. So, how do we do this effectively? Simone, we can start with you.
Yeah, starts with listening. One of my old bosses used to say, you know, two ears and one mouth, and use them in that proportion. And I think, you know, if that was aimed at somebody else in the organization, not me. And I think actually it's one of them things that stuck with me, and being really aware of that as well. You know, we've all got an opinion and something to add to something, but actually everything starts with active listening. And you know, what is your body language giving off as well as you're talking? It's not just what you're saying verbally. If you're sat there as a leader with your arms crossed and looking very defensive, that's not going to allow the person in front of you to have that kind of psychologically safe communication with you where they're going to be honest. So definitely starts with listening. We talk about, you know, giving and receiving feedback within there as well, and the use of persuasion. And persuasion done in a right way, in a human way, in a way with integrity. It's not about kind of bribing people. It's about persuading and negotiating and, you know, doing the communication bit with, this is my message and this is what I stand for and this is, you know, and I welcome your thoughts on this, and I'm going to sit back and I'm going to listen to them thoughts. So it's how really the organization approaches all of these things. And we also include things as well like networking and public speaking, because I think, you know, for both of us, it's something, you know, that we both really believe in and has really helped our careers over the years as well. So it's something, you know, leading the organization, it's how that ties then into leading the communication, is actually how can you go and talk about the organization and the brand and what it stands for externally to the company as well, from the networking point of view and from public speaking, you know, what you stand for, and telling stories. So we cover all of that. So
I think that on a very like high level on this is that, and I've seen it all too often, that communication is absolutely key, and there are many, many leaders out there who fail to communicate in the right way with their teams, with their people, with their clients, with their leaders internally, stakeholders, or not. And I think the big thing for this section for us is really spending time with leaders, teaching them how to communicate in a better way. That doesn't necessarily mean just standing up in front of an audience and doing a big public speech. That's just everyday communication. How can we think about what we say and how that impacts people when we say it? And then like improve our skills as well, you know, like Simone says, you know, can we be better storytellers? Can we speak better in public by using tonality and melody and pauses in the right way? But it's that whole, I think everything is underpinned by this communication piece, because you can have all the best ideas in the world, you can have all the best things going on, but if you can't communicate your message or with your people, then you might as well not bother.
Absolutely, yeah, communication is key. And then, so we've discussed all of those different components of the human-centric leadership framework. And I think just one final question I've got to summarize it all is what really changes in organizations and companies when leaders lead in that human-centric way? What benefits do we see in those organizations in terms of how the company is performing and also how people are feeling in the organization? Simone, we can start with you.
Yeah, I think, you know, what changes is if people care and if there's loyalty to the organization. And let's say, for example, you know, it's 5 to 5 on a Friday and everybody finishes at 5 o'clock. And as you're walking out of the building, you can see water dripping in reception through the roof. If you don't care about that organization and you literally are just turning up and waiting for the weekend, you're going to walk past that water leak and you're just going to leave and not even think about it. If you care about that organization, you're going to turn around and go, oh, I better go and tell somebody about that. So, yes, I need to get back in the lift. I need to go up 20 floors back into the building. I need to find somebody to tell. And yes, it's 5 to 5 on a Friday, but my organisation needs to know that. And that is one really practical example. These water leaks are things that happen throughout the organisation day to day that all add up, and cracks are firming up in the organisation, and water seeping through. And it's all these kind of examples where it results in people leaving the organisation, bad mouthing the organisation on sites like Glassdoor, telling their friends you do not want to apply for a job there, it's awful. It's all these small things that add up. And actually, when things are done in a human-centric way, people want to work there. People care about what they're doing. They bought into the mission. They feel looked after, not just kind of emotionally and financially, but like just, they're not getting stressed at, oh God, that person's done that thing again over there. And it's just a healthier environment to be in, and people just feel better and more well working in that organization.
Yeah, and Lisa, what can you add to
Yeah,
that?
so we said this when we wrote the book. This isn't about perfect leadership. It's not about, developing a perfect leader, because that does not exist. But we want people to be, to be much more, have better knowledge, skills, and behaviors than they do already. And if they do, if they increase that awareness and organizations become better, then trust increases, engagement deepens, and every on the decision make the decisions they make as an organization, as people in offside organizations improve, all of those things get better. So we don't want the perfect leader, but we do want people to be much better at leadership. We want organizations to be better, and we want people to feel hope and trust in the organizations that they work in and the people that they work for, because people, spend so much time, their time at work. So we want people to enjoy that time and not have it, as someone says, am I looking at the weekend and what, just for the pay packet? We all know that we have, that we need to work. So let's make that meaningful.
Yeah. I was reflecting on this actually at the weekend. I've got a, and I'd say friend now, but a friend that I no longer work with, but has worked at four organisations with me where I've managed her four times and led her four times. And I was reflecting on this because I was chatting to her, and it was really interesting because I was thinking like, what's made her follow me around four times? Like, what is going on there? And I was thinking about my leadership style and the way that we've just kind of built this connection over time. And I also was thinking about how could I have been better? Because there was definitely in my early days when I first worked with her, I think there was times where I thought I was awful, but obviously the good bits have kind of weighed out enough that she's wanted to come and work for me again. And I think actually that not being perfect, but actually being human about it. And if I was having a bad day, I would be really honest and say, I'm having a really bad day today. This is thing has happened over here. Can you just give me half an hour and you'll get a better version of me? And I just remember just being really honest about things like that when I was working in quite a high pressure environment, and it's, have you got 2 minutes? And I'd be like, I actually haven't got 2 minutes. Instead of having this rushed conversation where I wasn't present and was rushing and I wasn't kind of, wanting to be the best version of myself for her, I used to just say, just give me 5 minutes. I'll be back in a minute. And I think it's things like that that I think created her the environment of psychological safety and boundaries and honesty, rather than just getting this rubbish version of me all the time. So yeah, it was something I was thinking about at the weekend, which was nice and hard at the same time. And I was wondering how I can get my job in our organisation, because I was thinking she doesn't work for us yet. So.
I think it reminds me very much of the Simon Sinek Four Seasons, when he talks about Noah, the barista who works in two different hotels, one where he, doesn't feel valued, trusted, and has no loyalty, yet another where the people have made him feel psychologically safe and trusted that he loves to work there. Same job, if you like, but two different companies. And I think that really is that bit that we want to promote, is that you can have, you people when people feel psychologically safe and the trust exists, then they are going to be much, much happier in the work that they do.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think that's a very nice message to end this conversation on. So thank you both very much for your time today. I really enjoyed talking about your book, and I encourage our listeners to grab a copy of The Human-Centric Leader to read more about your insights about human-centric leadership. But thanks again for your time.
Thank you.
Yes, thanks.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Make sure you keep an eye on our social media at Lit Publishing on LinkedIn, X, Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook for more information about new books and podcasts with thought leaders. See you next time on Lit Radio Podcast.